You can just start again, it starts.
Because if you pause it, it starts all over.
So on Shabbos, we had discussed what the element is of Yom HaZikaron as opposed to Yom HaDin. Remember, we went through the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah to show that there's really, doesn't seem to be any relationship even between the Yom HaZikaron element and the Yom HaDin element, because even after we had established that there was a din on Rosh Hashanah ad Acharei Shanah, the Gemara still didn't have a clue that that meant it was Rosh Hashanah and that the interrelationship of the two would be obvious. It wasn't obvious. We still needed to bring a pasuk in Tehillim. Boy, you're really there today. That's fun. Needed to bring a raya. Maybe it's that yarmulke on Shabbos. It's sort of needed to bring a raya from Tehillim that it was also Chokli Yisraelu Mishpat Elokei Yaakov, and that was the marker that the Yom HaZikaron was also a Yom HaDin. We still didn't see any particular interface between the two. Certainly, we didn't find that they were related in terms of their fundamental source. So we were talking about, and I said we continued to pursue this during the course of the week, we were talking about what the element of Zikaron is in Rosh Hashanah. The first thing that we spoke about on Shabbos, the simplest element is what's mentioned in the Machzor itself. And in the Machzor, we read that Rosh Hashanah is Zikaron LeYom Rishon. So we came to see it as the expression of Maaseh Bereishis. It's the actual day of creation. The day of creation in the sense of the day of creation of man. And the Medrash even says that just as Adam HaRishon, having eaten from the Eitz Hadas, was omed bedin in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that kishem shata amadatat bedin lefanai v'yatzata bedimus, as you went out with a psak din that allowed you really continued life and development in the world, so are your children destined to be omed bedin lefanai v'yom hazeh. And that at least relates, I mean, very generally, the fact that we would be zocher, that this would be a fundamental time of memory, meaning the memory of that which lies behind our own existence. However, we need to look further into the element of Zikaron and see how it actually relates to Din, and what the two aspects of the day are. So in order to do that, I'd like you to turn to the third parak in Hilchos Teshuvah. The third parak is where the Rambam discusses the concept of Din, though he doesn't get around to calling it that until much later in the parak, not right up front. And in Halacha Gimel of this parak, he discusses Rosh Hashanah directly. But first, let's read his introduction, so to speak, to Rosh Hashanah, if you can call it that. Kol echad v'echad mibnei ha'adam yesh lo zechuyot ve'avonot. Now, you must understand that whenever the Rambam says something, he's not playing games. He doesn't say statements that are evident. He seems to be thinking that he's telling us something important. Everybody has zechuyot and avonot. And we sort of assume that the things that we do mean something, and that, you know, I guess there's brownie points or whatever. I mean. But even his language, what he's saying, I mean, what's the chiddush in that? But even what he says doesn't make sense, because you can't really juxtapose zechuyot and avonot, right? I mean, zechuyot mean merits, and avonot means sin. I mean, if you could juxtapose mitzvahs and avonos, or chovah and zchut. Chovah is demerits in Hebrew, zchut is merit. But this seems to be making a pair of two things that are not related to each other. It's a different thing. The avon seems to be the thing that you do wrong. What's your name?
Seth.
Seth, right. I met you. You look different on Shabbos. Yeah, but you're also more attentive, aren't you? I think. So, can we have you back?
Yeah.
Great. So zechut va'avon is our first problem. How exactly does it match up? Mishi zechuyotav yeterot al avonotav tzadik. Somebody who has more zechut than avon is a tzadik. What is that? I don't know what that's supposed to mean. I mean, for what? For somebody going to pat him on the head exactly? I mean, I don't know what it means that he's a tzaddik. It's like, does that mean you're supposed to go with him with money for brachas or something? I mean, he is officially recognized as tzaddik. He can put up a plate on his door and so on, and you can come in. I mean, I don't know what he's trying to say. Maybe the Rambam, after all, tries to be as effective as possible in his language. Maybe he's setting up his terms. So in order to avoid mentioning later again the idea of somebody who's chuyot or more than a zavonah, it's a long statement. So he says, okay, from now on I'm going to shorthand, I'm going to refer to that with the word tzaddik. Okay, let's see if that holds water as we go. Somebody who's got more avon than zechut is called a rasha. It's harder to put a plaque up like that, and it's not quite clear what you get out of it. Now comes the height of tautology. Mechsel amechta, somebody who's right in the middle, beinoni, he's a middleman. Or he's in the middle. I mean, I should hope so. I don't know. So maybe he's just clarifying his terms. I don't know. V'chein ha-medina. Now this is true about countries. There's such a thing as tzaddik countries. Now this already is a little more difficult because, I mean, you know, what is, does that change immigration policies or so on? That isn't clear. But im ha-yuzekuyot ko yoshveh. If you take the entire population and you take a look at the conglomerate zechuyot, and if they're merubot alavonotehem on the aggregate avon, harezu tzadeket, and the country is a tzadeket, v'imayu avonotehem merubim harezu risha'ah, v'chein kol olam kulo, and so too, the entire world is also in this same, whatever, categories. Now, in Halacha Beis, he immediately shows us that he was not defining terms because he goes through the whole rigmarole again. Instead of saying a rasha, he says, Adam shavonotav merubin hazukuyotav. See, he didn't save any words by spending a whole halacha telling us what a rasha was. And that someone who is avonotav merubin hazukuyotav is a rasha, he just goes ahead now and repeats it anyway. Adam shavonotav merubin hazukuyotav, miyad hu meit b'risho, immediately dies in his evil. Now, as the Ravid points out, any idiot knows that that's not true, right? I mean, it's only the good die young. I mean, all of these other guys, they go on forever. The more Russian you are, the harder it is to get rid of you, it seems, in the world. Truth is, Tosis has discussion in the Gemara about the whole idea of, you know, Mechtam Lechaim on Rosh Hashanah, and he says, that can't be true. I mean, it's experientially not the case. I mean, who's trying to sell us fairy tales over here? Nobody ever dies. Anyway, it's also crazy. What do you mean? Adam shavonotav merubim hazechuyotav. And it's miyad umet berisho. Immediately drops dead. Immediately drops dead. So like how, you know, when do we start? At the moment of bar mitzvah, I guess, right? Okay. So now this kid, shkia. Okay, go. Bing. Now. He starts moving. Okay. If he says the first kriyat shema that he's got, with Kavana, that's one. Beep. Now he gets the Shemone Esrei. If he misses the third bracha, now he's exactly in the middle. If he misses one other bracha and he says it with the wrong Kavana, boing, he's dead. This rarely happens. Miyadu made the Rishol is like very far-fetched. I mean, anyway, if there's a game, there ought to be innings, right? I mean, well, we're just going to call it wherever you're at. I mean, there is such a concept, right? When you go over a long time, so then you can call a game. What's that called? It's got a name. It's called a dead. No, they call it a dead. It has something to do with death. Sudden death. That's it. Thank you. Right. Sudden death. That's exactly what the Rambam seems to be describing is always the case. Sudden death. The Adonai Parishon. I mean, we do that after we play a long, long game over here. It's not giving us any innings at all. It's like as soon as you hit that Mirubina Osukuyota, the Adonai Parishon. I mean, that's really crazy. Forget about the Ravid's question. I mean, that obviously is experientially not the case. Nor does it make any sense. I mean, how do you make a world like that? It wouldn't go on very long. The Chen Medina Shevonotea Mirubin, Miyad Hiovedet. Same thing is true about a country. The country is immediately destroyed. Shnema zakat sedom ve'amora ki rabba. Ki rabba means rove. I guess it's trying to bring a raya about rove. But not, the only problem is, what's the continuation of that passage? was Sodom and Gomorrah instantly wiped out? And it says, Kirabah?
Because Avram started asking, you know, can you, if we can find...
But even in the same passage, you're right, but even in the same passage, what does it say? Yotchetzcha.
Yeah.
Do we have any, a Tanakh? Is that a Tanakh? Say it aloud.
The
yeah. Okay, and then followed by what happened?
The next topic is
Kitsa Akata.
Haba
Eli Asu Kala. Okay, so the next topic is let's see whether the tzaka that came in front of me was right. What's true, if they really did that. So, I don't understand. I mean, it'd be too late to see. They'd already be gone. So, I mean, even the part that he's talking about doesn't really say that. It doesn't say that they disappear instantly. I mean, they didn't disappear instantly. God actually says in the next part. Now I'm going to go down, I'm going to take a look and see whether this is the case. So maybe that's what he's referring to. Maybe he's cutting it short. Maybe he's essentially relying on the next pasuk that says that im kitzakata asu. If they did that, so then kala, then they're finished, kaput. So maybe he's relying on the kaput for the miyad, even though it wasn't quite miyad. But let's take a look at the continuation. V'chein kol olam kulo. By the way, you notice that the last time he's got to prove that was Sodom v'Amor. You know of any other country that suddenly disappeared instantly? Poof. I mean, heck, the last time a black hole struck, it was in Siberia somewhere. They're still waiting for the asteroid. Nobody's gotten wiped out like that. Right? So what's happening here? I mean, again, it's like the bar mitzvah kid question. I mean, this doesn't happen. V'chein kol olam kulo. I mean, you notice any planets vaporizing lately around you? Same thing to the whole world. Where do we know that from? Well, there's only one place. That's the Bible. That was the only time we had planetary destruction. So, Ima, you have an attainment, will be mischriotehen. If they have more avon than zechut, miyadin nishchatin, they're immediately wiped out. Shinema bayah, Hashem ki rabara ata adam. God saw that man was in terrible shape. Yeah. And what happened when he saw that? He gave him 120 years. So, I mean, what's he bringing a proof to something that isn't so? Now this weighing is not according to the number of zechut and avon, it's according to the value that is given them. There's such a thing as a zechut that could be the equivalent of a lot of avonot. Something good. Something good is enough to save a man who was otherwise a rasha. Sometimes something bad you can do that can be the equivalent of many, many good things. The ink shoklin, we cannot do this shikul ala badato shel el deyot. The shikul can only take place within the mind of the God of mind. He knows how it is that we would. Orchin, that's a strange thing. Orchin, it's evaluate. Let's translate that. Evaluate. We'll think about it more. Let me ask you about this piece here. I mean, shikul ze, which shikul? Who said anybody had to make a shikul? He started off by saying everybody has zukuyot vavonot. That's a given. I mean, that's an existential statement. Nobody needs to make it happen. It is that way. He's saying everybody is that way. He's not saying God has assigned to everybody zechuyot v'avonot. No, everybody has. I mean, that seems to be the result of having lived, acted, and interrelated with the world, and that's the way it is. Yeshlo. Matter of fact, maybe that's the chiddush of those words. We were wondering what the chiddush is. Well, obviously, I mean, if there's a Torah, I mean, we're not learning Yom Kippur without knowing there's a Torah. So if there's a Torah, then apparently there's such thing as zechuyot v'avonot, right? No, wrong. because I might easily have said that unless it is so defined that someone has looked at you and said, okay, look, you know, that was bad. So then you don't have that. I mean, it's got to be defined as such. You know, what was the impact upon you and so on. I mean, maybe you don't, but he says, no, that's a given. So then which shikul is he talking about? The weighing, is there a weighing process? And the weighing process needs to take place in the mind of God. What if he doesn't weigh? Then what would be? Suppose somebody has Kriyot Vavanot and God doesn't weigh. Well, that's possible, right? Well, he doesn't weigh all the time, does he? I mean, obviously he's talking about Shikul Zeh, it means he's talking about the specific thing. So if it isn't weighed, what happens? What the Rambam is saying is a remarkable thing. He's saying this. That first halacha. When would that be? Is there a counter in the sky? Ding, 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 ding. No, he says there can't be a counter in the sky. Because, after all, you would need for God to weigh it because it can't be counted on any other level other than in the mind of God because it needs to be aruch, whatever that means. But aruch, we use in modern terms, as being edited. Aricha is edited. And aricha, the simple level, is juxtaposing things. So let's say you have the ma'aracha on the mizbeach. You put a piece of wood here, another piece of wood there, two pieces on top, and so on and so forth. You create a matrix, so to speak, of the wood for the fire. Over here, when you're talking about an aricha of these elements, you are talking about taking things and seeing them relative to each other. That's the point. I mean, that's an amazing thing. That means that there is no given meaning to zechut v'avon insofar as one is nogea the other. It's only within the context of an aricha where I'm measuring one against the other. In other words, it's the relative thrust, which is understandable. If you have a guy who's a tremendous tzaddik, and he goes and suddenly does something just outrageous. So he says, oh my God, a guy like that doing something, that's unbelievable. So okay, so maybe for that person, that act was an extremely meaningful and powerful, horrible thing, which to, you know, a regular guy in the street might not have been so horrible. It just might have been another one of his normal things that he runs over in the course of a day. And the opposite is also true. You know, some guy who spends the day basically shooting old ladies and stealing their purses, you know, and suddenly he sees somebody, reminds him of his grandmother, and he walks her across the street and, you know, gives her $100 and so on. He's like, gee, that guy, and wow, that's amazing. So it makes a tremendous impression. You can see that that would be more meaningful. It's all in context. So really would be one would be relative to the other, but who's making it relative to the other? There cannot be a counter to make things relative because counters don't, they just measure one and the other, but not one against the other, right? Here we're saying it's only El Deot that can measure one against the other. Actually, what are you? Kineged Avonot. In other words, the whole concept is a concept of relative evaluation. So without that relative evaluation, what happens? You still have Zechuyot, you still have Avonot. Nobody has created that relative evaluation. So what are you? You are nothing. You are not a Tzaddik. You are not a Rasha. You are not a Beinoni. You're nothing. You are just exactly what we would expect, by the way, that a person would be. Nothing. I mean, after all, you're in the middle of a process. You're going from cradle to grave. So, at any particular point, you could change yourself totally, as well you know. Our entire life is completely chaotic. As we're told by Chazal, Al tiftach ba'atzmecha yom motcha, don't trust yourself until the day you die. And we know plenty occasions in which people close their eyes and here we go. We know plenty occasions in which very great people suddenly turn sour, or vice versa. So, okay, so a person is really in a state of chaos. He doesn't have a specific definition. That makes a lot of sense. Unless we're calling the innings. I mean, I understand. We're calling the game, so then fine. That's giving a definition to what the person is, the end of the process. Very similar to a state in physics in which you have a subatomic particle, which haven't defined. You have the cat in Schrodinger's box, right? Nobody's looked at the cat. What's the cat? Is it dead or alive? It's neither. Because you haven't as yet collapsed that wave function of the potentiality. Well, that's exactly the case of a human being. As long as he's in a state of chaos, which could be this, could be that, nobody looks. God isn't peeking into the box to figure out whether he's dead or alive. Is he Tzadik, Rosh, Beinoni? What is he? And he's a waveform of potentiality, that's all. You can, you know, maybe you could try to predict that, oh, it looks to me like he will be going in this direction, but heck, you don't know. He doesn't know. So actually, without a shikul, the human being would be exactly what you would expect him to be. Nothing. Comes along now, the Rambam says, shikul's there, and he doesn't say when the shikul is. Maybe it's only at death. All we know is it has to be at some point, because there is that collapse of the process. The given collapse is death. That's a given. So, at the point of death, we understand that if he died, and he was a rush at that point, then he died berisho. What would cause a shikul like this to take place? Well, the end of life. I mean, a person is assigned a certain amount of time to live. Walking, the Gemara says, walking under the Twin Towers as a plane bumps into it. So then we need to examine, does this guy get out or does he not get out? Okay, then that calls the shots. So now we have to decide. That causes a shikul. Actually, Gemara doesn't even say you need a plane. I mean, just under a wall that's sort of leaning. That would be enough. Okay, the guy wants to go under a wall that's about to collapse. Well, does he get it or does he not? Okay, so let's look. So it says always avoid those kinds of situations. I mean, you don't want to call the game that you would need to be measured then. Fine. But he doesn't say anything about when such a shikul would take place. So all we know is that such a shikul would definitely take place at the end. That's the only given. Unless there is a shikul, we have a curious situation. That the element of zechut va'avon per se does not require a shikur. Kol echad v'echad yesh lo zechuyot va'avonot. That's a reality. So in other words, whatever is happening to you existentially is happening to you. You're carrying around the memory of every single blow that knocked you low and survived. You're carrying that around with you. You guys are too young probably for Simon and Garfunkel anyway. You're okay with that. Good. Okay. That's the Zechuyot V'Avonot that you're carrying around with you. But the question of how does it define your state? You don't have a state. You're simply a guy who's going around feeling exactly like most people feel most of the time, that life is chaotic and so are they. So it comes around the Rambam to say, okay, so then there's this element of a shikul. Now we'll see that this shikul has to do with the concept of din, but notice that he didn't use the word din. He's talked about the shikul. Now, in Halacha Gimel, the Rambam seems to introduce something that has absolutely nothing to do with this whole thing. He goes off on a crazy tangent, and then suddenly remembers where he was and gets back to the subject again. I'm going to have to figure out why he does this. But he says like this, Halacha Gimel, Kol mi shenichem al ha-mitzvot she'asa, somebody who changes his mind about the mitzvot that he did, v'taha al ha-zechuyot, and he wonders about the significance of these chuyot supposed that he got. Yomar b'libo, he says in his heart, umah ha-alti v'asiyatam, what did I gain by doing all these crazy mitzvot? Halavai lo asiti yadam, I wish I'd never done them. What a waste of time. Could have been at the movies all the times I was in the place of Medrash. Hareza ibedet kulam. He loses all of them. Now this is an amazing thing. Loses. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. When it comes to doing teshuva, it is all you need to do. Oy, halavai, I wouldn't have done all of those terrible averas. And that's it. Hareza ibedet kulam. All your averas go out the window and everything is perfect. Is that it? I mean, it's like this whole fancy Hilkot Teshuvah with all these difficult things you need to do in order to get out of doing Averis. But to get out of doing mitzvahs, that's easy. You just say, I could have been at the movies. Goodbye, mitzvahs. Wave goodbye. That's all. How is that possible? I thought the Gemara says midat tovas murubal midat puraniyot, 500 times greater in terms of God's chesed over his anger. Midat hadin. So, and how could it be so easy to kiss your mitzvot goodbye and so difficult to kiss your averus goodbye? This doesn't really seem to hold water. But you'll notice, again, it doesn't talk about losing the reality of the zechut. All he says is, "Ein matzkirin lo shum zechut b'olam." We don't. Now, here's the first time he used the word memory in this context. Starting to get suspicious. We don't remember for him any zechut in the world. Shenema b'tzidkat atzadik lo tatzileno b'yom rish'ol. The fact that a person was a tzaddik, that won't help him on the day that he turns sour. Now, I've explained to you, the Rambam essentially says here between the lines, I've explained to you that we always have an aricha. So this seems to be a contradiction to what I've said, because I said that we're going to measure what you did bad against what you did good. And here it says you could suddenly lose, and there'd be no way for us to perform that shikul. Well, Ein Ze Ela B'Tohel HaRishon. No, this is only where you are changing your relationship to what you had done earlier. So what's the Ein Matzkirin? The Ein Matzkirin law, we don't remember it for him. In other words, what that seems to be saying is that the process of the Aricha that we were referring to before, the Shikul that we were referring to before, is essentially an act of memory. That's the Matzkirin. So we won't remember that when we add it up. Now, we have a very childish view of the nature of memory. I mean, we talk about memory, it's, you know, it's just the sort of thing you do. Something that was in the past, and now you remember it. But the truth is, memory is much, much more than that. Because if we're talking about the creation of a state, Sadiq Rasha Beinoni, let's not get so spiritual. Let's talk about the creation of a human psyche. Creation of a personality. Creation of a life, a human life, okay? What makes you you? What is your identity? What is it formed of? Events? Events are chaotic. The fact is, if we would give equal weight to every last piece of stimulus that was entering our brains, we'd go totally mad. It's just it's complete chaos. We form patterns with our minds. If not, we'd be infants. I mean, infants spend all their time forming patterns, basically learning. As a matter of fact, most of infancy in terms of neural development is sloughing away neural connections because it's too much data. So the development of the brain, surprisingly, is culling out connections rather than adding connections, because we have to choose, Seth. We have to choose those patterns that make us us. You know what those patterns are essentially called? Memory, yeah. Right? In other words, we create our history, our personal history, out of memory. We create our learning out of anything that we do it because we have a function called memory that sticks things together. So we can ride a bicycle because of memory, drive a car because of memory, think of ourselves as us because of memory, only because of memory. As a matter of fact, essentially, the word for memory, as we use it in a verb, to remember, means to take something and attach it to something else. Remember it, right? Or make it a member of something. So when the Rambam is talking about over here the creation of a state, he's simply extending the idea that we anyway know. And that memory aspect is us, on the simple level of identity. All human identity is built of memory. So whatever state it is that we achieve, if he's talking about this meta memory, in which the mind of God measures zechut keneged avon, we understand that that's essentially the same process. What defines the pattern which is me and you? And the truth is, in the very same way that we can reject elements of our lives here in the Rambam and Perek Gimel, the same thing is true of our psychic development. We repress memories. We erase memories. We stress other memories. And everybody's got a life story that the other people living in their family said, gee, I don't know how the heck you came out with that. I always thought you were the favorite. For that type of thing, right? In other words, everybody has picked out memories that to them is what they've seen in life. It has nothing to do with external reality of necessity, but it's their interpretation of the things that they are picking, putting together in order to create a personality. Now, if it's a very dysfunctional personality, maybe they'll go to a psychiatrist and he'll help them dig through their memories and realize that that was maybe, that was given too much weight. Talking about shikul. Teach them how to be ma'arich, the memories, one connected to the other, so that they could get a better sense of what was really happening in their lives and reconstruct the elements of their psyche that were dysfunctional. Well, that's exactly what's happening over here in terms of the din. The person rejects elements of his life. Well, that doesn't mean that the zchuyot va'avonot are not there. It means that they're not muskar. Just like all of the events of your life are there, you haven't changed the past, but they're not muskar. They're not brought into this shikul, which creates a totality, an integrated totality, which is you. Now you'll note that as far as Rosh Hashanah being the day of creation, that even on a personal level, this element that we're calling Zikaron personal is exactly the way that creation proceeds. Did you see that, sir? Would you like to see that? Seriously, yeah, like to see that. Okay. So let's take the simplest example of that. Simplest example is the way in which life comes into being. How is life formed? Incredibly, life is only formed through memory. Why? Very simple reason. Again, these are things that people overlook absurdly. I'm sure you must have heard the arguments against evolution, like how could something so incredibly impossible in terms of the probabilities come out of a process that is completely random and chaotic, right? But the whole point of Darwin was to recognize that memory works. That was the whole discovery. He ingeniously came up with a way to work evolution through memory. And it goes like this. Now the argument is, of course, you take a million monkeys and you have them all typing, how long is it going to take them to type up Shakespeare? Oh, it could take forever. More time than the universe has. So therefore it can't happen, right? True. But suppose you take only 10 monkeys and you want them to write Kol HaTorah Kula. Well, obviously that's never going to happen unless you have a selective memory device, okay? Now suppose you have a memory device, like a computer, and it's attached to these little typewriters. So the first monkey that touches bait, the computer takes that bait and stores it because it knows that's what it's looking for, right? How long does it take 10 monkeys to press bait? I mean, I don't know, 3 seconds, whatever, right? Okay, fine. Now they continue. The next monkey who presses a resh, the computer selects and stores it. Next monkey who presses an olive, the computer selects and stores it. So we now have bereshes. So how long does it take to press Kol HaTorah Kula? Not very much time at all. I mean, almost as fast as you could type. What Darwin's insight was, is that if there is a way to store data that is meaningful, then things that would be totally chaotic end up happening fairly rapidly. And that was his ingenious insight. There is a natural way to select data that's meaningful, if it's useful. If it's useful, then reproduction will proceed quicker for those things that are useful. They'll be more likely to spread their genes. He didn't know how genes preserve data because he didn't know about DNA, but obviously they did. And essentially, the process of natural selection would preserve on the computer tape, which we now understand is simple chemicals, every useful change. So in a mere few 100 million years, you could come up with the monkeys essentially typing out the human genome. An ingenious thing. That's the point. The whole idea is that it's not random. It's memory. So as each new element becomes incorporated now in a genetic record, it becomes effective, more effective with each addition and so on, you see? So the development of the story of life is on the simplest level, the story of memory. But forget about the story of life, because there's much more to the universe than the story of life. Essentially, when you're dealing with chaos, and the creation is a chaotic thing, that's clear. I mean, as Chazal tell us, there were entire universes that didn't work. Fine. Then what preserves information outside of the context of the development of life, but simply that allows for the formation of complexity, is also a process of selection, of memory. The reason that universes were Nivnav and Echrab were wiped out is simply because they didn't work. So there's a selection of universes. Ultimately, you end up with a universe that works. That, too, is memory. So the process of creation itself, it's not just we say, Zikaron Yom Rishon, we remember the day of creation. It's that the day of creation was the first day of Zikaron, you see? So the Yom HaZikaron is the Zikaron of the day of Zikaron. Because that's the way in which the world was built. So the first level of understanding the interrelationship of Zikaron to Rosh Hashanah was simply the fact that it was the day of, but that's arbitrary. What I'm pointing out is that it's not arbitrary, it's more than that. Creation itself is a process of memory, and therefore the way in which we access and relate to the element called creation is through memory. And we understand that its impact upon us is this other element, which doesn't seem to be necessary, and that it defines our state. Now, and here's where we get to the non sequitur. Complete non sequitur. Wild. The Rambam has just finished describing the fact that somebody could turn his back on the mitzvot that he did and lose all of them and so on. And then he goes on to say, with a vav, even, as if it's like, and it's evident that, you know, these are interrelated. Who's that? U'cheshem. And in the same way, she'shoklim zikuyot adam v'avonotav b'shahat mitato. That a man's zechut and avon is weighed at the time of his death. What do you mean, the same way? You never said that. How could you say the same way when you never even said that happens? You see? Obviously, we were right in our interpretation of the previous two halachot, because that's exactly what we came up with. That would only be the collapse of the human wave function, in which death is the given shikul. Obviously, it's only at the end of the inning. It's at the end of the game, not at some particular point in between. So that he's taken as a given. I mean, it's clear when you read this that that's the time of Shikul. But, and here he tells us an amazing thing. In the same way that you have Bishat Mitato, Kach Bechol Shana V'Shana, so too on every single year, Shoklim Avonot Kol Echad V'Echad Miba'e Ha'olam. Every single human being's avonot are measured im zechuyotav b'yom tov shel Rosh Hashanah. Why exactly calls it a yom tov? This doesn't sound too happy. But anyway, on that good day, that happy day, joy to the world of Rosh Hashanah. Now, what this should mean then, what this should mean by the standards that the Rambam defined at the beginning, is that on Rosh Hashanah, people should be dropping like flies. Because anybody who's found to be a Rosh Hashanah, and he's miyad made berisho, because you're telling me that basically we're going to be doing this, you know, what we would do at the end, we're going to do it now, so then, you know, okay. So I mean, the first thing that we have out of this is that those three books that they bring in for Rosh Hashanah, you know, the books of Tzadikim Gemurim and Rishayim Gemurim and all of that. Well, the first thing we ought to do when we walk into the shul, maybe this is even better than Kol Nidre, start Rosh Hashanah by saying, God, the Beit Din has determined that everyone in this room is alive. Now that means that they're not Rishayim and Gemurim, they haven't died instantly, so why don't you hide that book? Of course, we know the answer to that. The Shikul hasn't taken place yet, so of course they're alive. But again, experience tells us that people don't drop like flies. Forget about experience. The Rambam tells us people don't drop like flies. Look what he says. Mishinim tzad tzadik nechtam l'chaim. Mishinim tzad asha nechtam l'mita. Signed in for death? What does it mean? Signed in. Is this like, you know, it's a death spa of some kind? It's a death row? What are you signed in terms of what? I mean, is it this year? Is it sometime in the future? I mean, I suppose everybody is signed in for death sometime in the future. I mean, so what exactly would it mean to be nechtam l'mita anyway? So he signed in. And the Beinoni, he's not signed in. So Lima Tod Yom HaKippurim, we let him hang until Yom Kippur. And we'll get to that. Let's leave that poor Beinoni out for a while. So he's contradicting himself. And he said, if there is a Shikul, then that Shikul creates Miyad Humeis or Nishkat, whatever the case may be, individual or Medina or so on. And now he's talking about signing someone in. Now, Tosfos says an amazing thing. Tosfos says, well, you know, what do you mean he's signed in for death? I mean, these guys don't die. That's the question I mentioned. They don't die. So if you sign them in for death, it seems to be a rather formal thing, but it doesn't seem to do anything. So Tosfos says the craziest answer. He says, well, it means he's signed in terms of Olam Haba. I mean, that's outrageous. What do you mean, in terms of Olam Haba? I mean, if the guy is going to be living next to Rosh Hashanah, he's going to be re-signed in, he gets a new room, he never got the old room. And what's the point? I mean, wait until the end, then, of the game and sign him into Olam Haba, when you know. Does it make sense to say, now, well, we'll have a din, theoretical din. If you were to die, but we won't let that happen, but if you were to die, this is where you would be. Good, bad, whatever it is. Of course, we're not telling you. So it doesn't come. If you got a report card, I can understand. So if in the mail you would receive your scores and you know what room you were in Olam Haba, that would be dramatic. That would be nice, or not, depends. But it would certainly be powerful. But nobody ever gets letters like that. In which case, the process seems to be a waste of time. Why should we go through this for something that anyway is going to change and doesn't have any real impact? But clearly what the Rambam is saying over here is that there exists the concept of a shikul in process. So in other words, there is a shikul that's called the end of the game. That's the Bishas Mitzato. That was what he was talking about on the beginning. So he's Mate Virisho. That's not what we're talking about over here, obviously. We're talking about an idea of a Chatima. So, but then again, so then what's the point? You're telling me that within process, knowing that the process continues, nonetheless we want to define a state which will be the point of departure. Remember that we spoke about that on Shabbos, that the din of Rosh Hashanah is the point of departure of the new year. Here's your rain. What's going to happen with it? That's up to you. Here's your water. I mean, this is the potential that you have. Here's your state. Now, what's going to happen with that state? That's up to you. You're still in the game. So obviously, but if you get a lot of heavy duty potential, you'll be able to use that. I mean, use that for good, use that for bad, but it's a good thing to have those additional powers. So apparently a state then within the context of process is a very important thing. Well, on the simplest level, I could see that it's important simply because it makes you something rather than completely chaotic. It would, I guess, be good to be a tzaddik, because then assuredly a state of tzaddik would mean that the things that present themselves to you as nisyonot would be more limited. You wouldn't find yourself in as much trouble. You could get into trouble if you want to, but you wouldn't be faced with the same level of problems unless you chose to look for them. I don't know, maybe that's the difference. But there's something that's much more important here about the whole thing. And that's really what Tosfos is alluding to. What's important about the whole thing is, and it's very difficult for us to imagine this because in fact there is a Rosh Hashanah and therefore we live in a world with Rosh Hashanah. But if there were no Rosh Hashanah,
and we humans would in fact always feel that we were in an undefined state in the midst of a process, the impact upon us would be that we would find no significance. In other words, the sense of meaning that we have in life, the feeling that we have that even though things are very chaotic and that we are still in a process that we don't know where it's going to go, but nonetheless we have a sense of transcendence. We feel ourselves existing from the outside. That sense in which certain things make us feel as if we're on the right path, or as if life is worthwhile, or as if we have something, is a result of Rosh Hashanah. It's the only point of contact that we have between a reality that we see from outside of ourselves after the entire process is completed and the reality that would have limited us to within the context of a process, and only within that context, with no ability to get out and look at ourselves from the outside. We take for granted that ability. It's part of the nature of human consciousness. It's what we mean almost by consciousness. To be out of your own head and look at yourself from the outside. But more than that, we take it so for granted that astonishingly, we talk to ourselves. Not only do we talk to ourselves, but amazingly, we ask ourselves advice. Now, who are we talking to? That means that everyone has this subliminal appreciation that they exist on two completely different levels. In a sense, you address the self that has already completed the process. So that you can ask yourself, so what should I do? Hey, buddy, who do you think you're talking to? And that's never the answer. The answer always is something meaningful, something real. Unless, of course, you're totally lost. Mr. Rambam says, if you don't have access to Rosh Hashanah, we'll see this in the next halacha, then you are lost in time. Simply lost in what he calls v'hablei hazman, in the emptiness of time, because time is total chaos for you. It's 1 second this and 1 second that and so on, and your mind continuously buzzes. That's all it does, is buzz. There's nothing there unless you can pop out of that process to stop the buzz. Otherwise, you're always finding yourself, what was I thinking about? Or, gee, what made me think about that? And you'll try to figure out, your own stupid mind, 10 steps back, like how you got to be thinking about this, usually can't even remember. That's a great way to live. It's horrifying when you think that that's all that we had, which is all that we would have, it wouldn't be for Rosh Hashanah. And life would be pretty horrific. So in giving us that contact, it essentially has made us creatures that are multi-leveled. We exist, yes, within the process. Yet there is an access to the element of a state that would be, and therefore in essence exists, because we're always also living in a world that's outside of that process. So that we could see, on the one hand, we could see the universe from the outside, so that we could see ourselves from the point of view, as Tosfos calls it, of Olam Haba. So if you were in Olam Haba, this is how you would see the world. And that means you could talk to that person, and you recognize that there's an element of you that knows the answers. Sometimes you choose to ignore the answers. But there's always that feeling, is this thing right, is this thing wrong, and so on. And oftentimes an actual discussion about the issue. So that aspect of ourselves that provides us with access, provides us with meaning, provides us with a sense of fulfillment, and with a clear sense of identity, is Zikaron oriented. And in that it's a direct expression of Maaseh Bereishit itself. It's part of the actual process of creation. Remarkable. So when we come to the din of Rosh Hashanah, he hasn't yet said that word, din. When we come to the din of Rosh Hashanah, we come to a shikul. Din requires something else. Din requires the carrying out of the shikul on some level. Because that's always what din means, and this is the way the Rambam uses the word din later. So danimoto lefi risho would mean that the person actually gets a sentence carried out. You can't, therefore, talk yet about real din. You can only talk about shikur. What the Gemara wants to know is, who said that the Yom HaZikaron is also Yom HaDin? That the Rambam hasn't even discussed, you know. He didn't talk about the fact that on Rosh Hashanah there is a psak din of mi reshit ad acharit. Doesn't even talk about it. You know why he doesn't talk about it? It has absolutely no halakhic ramifications. What's he going to talk about? The element of Rosh Hashanah, astonishingly, that is important in reality, is that it's the Yom HaZikaron. And yet, there needs to be a din in order for that Yom HaZikaron to work for some reason. Because otherwise, it's an impossible coincidence that the Yom HaZikaron should end up being the first of Tishrei, which is the day in which we decide Reshit HaShana at Acharit Shana. And the implication here is that Zikaron, without affecting reality, would never be meaningful. There must be an impact upon reality, what we call reality. The amount of rain that we're going to have, the life that we're going to lead. Because the theory is for some reason insufficient. And we have to think about why that would be true. In other words, we're not told that the thing to do on Rosh Hashanah is to meditate. To sit back and to think about ourselves. It's not meditation. Sarah Gimei Teshuvah has to do with tefillah, tzedakah, tshuva, and so on. But that's exactly the same as the concept of din. Something needs to be done with memory. But of course, that's also part of the nature of creation. Part of the nature of creation is that it is not theoretical. Creation, if it were theoretical, was always there. Because the potential for all aspects of existence exists within the fact of God's existence. Nothing is added to that, ever. So the only element of creation is exactly the type of element that we find in the creation of a human brain. It's culling. It's sloughing away. It's creating specific detail as opposed to chaos. Total data. Specific data. Zikaron. So if I can carry out something with that, if I do that, if I make that happen, then I become, in fact, a participant in the nature of creation. But if that's true, it means that my input into Zikaron is central. Amazingly enough, that's exactly what the Rambam did before he got to the din of Rosh Hashanah. He said, well now, yes, however, it depends how you look at those things. Well, why should it depend on that? I thought this thing was objective. Who cares what I think about it? So fine. So I say, what was the point? Well, so what? God knows better. He can be shokel zchuyot keneged avonot. What happened with that? But amazingly, this is true about creation itself. Because the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah actually says that when it says Vayachulo Hashamayim Vaharetz V'chol Tziva'am, so the Gemara says Tziva'am has two meanings. You can read that as Tziva'am, their hosts, there are many details. But lying in that idea is also the word Tzivyonam. A Tzivyonam has itself a double meaning. Tzivyonam means desire. Tzvi in Aramaic, we said that's, we call this Eretz Tzvi. Eretz Tzol, Eretz Tzvi. The land of desire. And Tzivyonam is the shape, the way something is. So Gemara says an astonishing thing about this. It says this teaches us that nothing exists unless its existence was discussed with it before it existed. And God asked it, would you like to be this? Seems somewhat paradoxical. But it certainly implies a relationship between the process and its own achievement, right? so strange that that should be so embarrassing. It's about as natural as going to the bathroom, isn't it? So what does it mean? It means that the end of the process is itself related to the input from the process. I mean, of course, that makes sense, doesn't it? It means that we're going to view creation itself as a process, not as something, yes, from the point of view of God. To say, creation exists. God says, let it be, and there it is. But from our own involvement in that process that we call creation, we understand that everything that we do, every input, somehow is reflected in the result. So that means in the same way that the Adam was part of the original act of creation, we spoke about that on Shabbos, it was his own choice that he defined his own nature. So that it's not part of history, it's part of creation, it's part of the Sheshes Yemei Bereshis, what happens in Gan Eden and his choice. So too is the Yom HaZikaron, a reconstruction of the input that a human being has into the definition of his own life. So that the way in which each of us relates to the things that we did during the course of the year is central to the Shikul, which is the Zikaron of those elements in the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's din. And in the same way that we spoke about on Shabbos morning, we spoke about the choice of life as opposed to the choice for just living, one's own particular element of what it means to live. So too on Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, you must engage in Zikaron. Imul afanai zichronot. You say zichronot. Why? Kadesh ta'aleh zichron chemotov alafanai, said your own personal zikaron should be part of the way in which I view you, letovah. Why is that? Because our own reconstruction of the history of creation is zikaron. So whatever extent we choose life, with the capital L, so then all of the elements that went into the process of making the world what it is now is important to us. We recognize its centrality. Am I boring you? Why are you yawning? Can I delicately allude to certain activities that you'd never yawn in, even at this time? This is one of those activities, or should be. I mean, the Gemara calls learning Torah making love. I assume that one doesn't yawn in such a moment. Don't yawn. So that means that when we engage in zichronot, those zichronot themselves are part of our input into creation. We remember, we care, we're involved. We don't yawn. That's a terrible thing to do in Russia. Imagine, you're walking there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is recreating the world. He says, so what do you think?
Well,
bad. Very bad. So you can see that. You can see that the extent of your interest, the extent of your involvement, the extent of your input, the extent of your own zikaron will in fact be ma'ale zikaron b'fanai litova. And so this becomes now stage two of our understanding of the Zikaron of Rosh Hashanah, and it enables us to understand our own lives, to utilize our own lives much more efficiently, and to walk into Rosh Hashanah at least having some sense of what the Avodat Hayom is. What are we thinking about? What are we doing? What are we involved in? We'll explore this further, Bezrat Hashem, on Thursday this year. Yeah? Okay. We have 59 seconds to go, rather 56. You know how to stop it? How to stop it?
Well, I think I hit it.
You have to hold it down. And then it